Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on what time you're watching this podcast. This podcast series we call Race, Culture, and the Church. Race, Culture, and the Church. It began 1 week after the murder of George Floyd, and we have 60-plus episodes, sessions of recordings. And as I share, I try to do every time we have a recording, to set the stage, think of this as a Venn diagram with race, culture, and church as circles. And our desire is to hit all three. And but two out of three, we always hit. We hope that three out of three will be achieved. And I am confident, as a matter of fact, because of our guests, I know we're going to hit all three, race, culture, and church. And I am pleased. I am absolutely thrilled to have in this space Pastor Rick Cole. Mm. Pastor,
thank you
so much for being a part of this conversation, entering into this space. It is great to see you.
Thank you. No, it's an honor to be with you. I'm grateful for what you do. And that combination of issues, race, culture, and church, they all intersect so much.
They do, whether we want to admit it or not.
For sure.
Yeah, that's right. They intersect. But you're someone who really doesn't need an introduction, but for that one person who doesn't know Pastor Rick Cole, you assume pastorate of Capital Christian Center, a huge congregation on Highway 50 off Bradshaw, September of 1995. And you were the 10th pastor at Capital Christian, and you're a graduate of Bethany Bible College. And got your master's from Southeastern University. Three kids, five grandkids,
Yeah. Probably
a couple of puppies and a bird or two in there too.
We don't have pets in our house, but our kids do.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that means you have pets because
Dad,
we're going on vacation. Can you watch a spot for us? We've resisted that temptation,
right.
We've resisted that offer. It is just so awesome to read your arc of ministry. Were you born in California?
No, I was actually born in the state of Ohio.
Okay.
My parents had met at Bible school in Missouri. My dad was from Washington State, my mom from Wisconsin, and then they met in Springfield, Missouri at Bible school.
Okay.
So they started ministry in Ohio, and that's where I was born. I was two when they moved to Washington State. So I grew up in Olympia, Washington.
Okay.
And then my parents moved down here to pastor Capital Christian Center. I was in college at the time. So we really kind of relocated our family to this area in 1978. I was just finishing college at the time. So that's how we got here. My dad pastored Capital for 17 years. And so I was raised in a pastor's home, loved it. Actually, it was a good experience for me. And then followed, I guess, in my dad's footsteps, so to speak. And he had a desire that I would follow him in pastoring the church there at Capital. I wasn't always sure that's what I wanted to do. It seemed daunting.
Daunting. Yeah. As I shared with folks that say they have they desire to be pastor of some ministry, I said, well, one of two things. If you desire that, either you don't know or
Yes. You're
crazy.
There you go.
You have to be called. So
yeah.
It sounds like the call was really on
Yes. Your
life early on.
It was. And learning that and stepping into it, I served in serving with my dad as he was pastoring at Capital. And then we got a call to pastor a senior pastor at church in Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay.
When 1990. So we moved from Capital, from Sacramento to Omaha. Our kids were small. And my wife and I pastored a church there for about 4 years. And we were there when my dad wanted to retire and do some other things. And so they started calling to see if we'd come back. And it was a hard decision. We'd really loved it in Omaha. But then, the churning of that call and praying it through and sensing that's what we're supposed to do, we answered the call, came back and followed my dad here at the church.
I'm curious, growing up, I mean, I have my own story. This podcast is about Pastor Rick Cole, not about me.
I'd love to hear.
But what was it you saw in your father that drew you along with the Holy Spirit into pastoring? Oftentimes, folks that are close to, dare I say, the flame, are repulsed. It's like, no, I don't want anything to do with that.
Yeah. I think one of the things my dad had was a very positive personality. So it seemed like he never had a bad day.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't put together like that. Seriously. it used to annoy me.
Wow.
he seemed to always be on top of it. So he carried that home. And at home, there was a positive, joyful atmosphere. And I think it lent well for me to feel good about the church, because he didn't bring, I'm sure there was lots of challenges and hard things going on, but he wasn't bringing it home. Hmm. So our family was quite into sports. My dad loved sports. So I got raised in that, played sports in school, high school, and he would come and be a part of that, get to know my friends through that. So it sort of normalized life for me, where it felt the church and going to school and being with friends didn't seem like wildly separate things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, he was able to set an atmosphere that attracted me to the church and always had a good experience with it.
That's awesome. So if I were to call someone from the ministry in Omaha and they would say, Pastor Rick Cole, he breathed a breath of fresh air and new life into the ministry. Say, yeah. What two or three adjectives would they use to describe you in that setting?
I think relational. I loved the people, and we had a really good kind of family feeling in the church. Hmm. I think passion. I had passion for the work. And that it's interesting. When I view myself in my own personality, I'm a pretty laid back, calm person. My mom was kind of built that way. I think I've had a lot more my mom's personality even than my dad. Hmm. But probably some of the work ethic and such, my dad was pretty driven. Some of that is probably also built into how I'm made up. So I was passionate about the ministry. Sometimes I would feel like when I get up to speak, I've become a different person almost. Like
sure.
That passion to talk about Jesus stirred me, and I love to talk about him. So passion, I think, in toward Jesus, and then relational toward the people. Those were things I think that they would say.
You were pastor at Capitol for how many years? 28
years.
So that's, that's where I grew to know, met you during that arc of your ministry. Just full disclosure, I was a part of St. Paul Missionary Baptist Church under Dr. Williams, and you opened your heart and ministry to St. Paul and to African-American community in celebration of Martin Luther King Day.
Right.
And we had celebrations there. I was always struck by your humility and kindness during those times. So when you say relational and compassion, those are two words I would also use also to describe you.
Yeah, thank you.
But your ministry over those 28 years, not that your father wasn't compassionate or relational,
sure,
but what did Pastor Rick Cole bring that Pastor Glenn Cole didn't bring? Or maybe it was the same, but on steroids. I don't know.
No, I'm sure each of us have a different makeup, a different personality, and maybe perhaps even a different call of some elements of the call might be specifically different. Something happened for me when I was in Omaha, actually, is when my passion for diversity really developed. And I think I was raised in an environment that was really very traditional and very white. And in Omaha, there was a mixture of cultures there that was unique. And I developed a friendship with a pastor of a black church, and we became friends. He was about my age. And through our friendship, we ended up doing a couple exchanges.
Wow.
He came and preached at our church. I went and preached at his. It started this desire for connecting across the racial lines. And it was actually a segregated town, Omaha. There was elements of the city where segregation was kind of a part of its history. But there was a desire to come together. And a professor at one of the universities nearby, the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, attended our church in Omaha. It was only about 45 minutes from Lincoln. And this professor was a professor of sociology, saw this desire that I had and was teaching in the sociology department about race relations, met with me and started teaching me about how to see the world differently. That if we can see the world through someone else's eyes, it can cause us to come together more. She gave me some books to read of Martin Luther King, letters from the Birmingham jail, other books about his work and ministry. And I started immersing myself into some of those works. And it was not something I think I purposefully decided I'm gonna go after this. It happened. It just developed. And I think it was God, you know, calling me to what can I do to help bring about more understanding. And our church became more diverse there in Omaha. So when I came back to Sacramento, that had been planted, I think, in my heart. It might have been one of the reasons why he called us there to Omaha.
100%.
Is to experience what I did and experience in that regard. Coming back to Sacramento, our church was more largely white, and yet this community is quite diverse, one of the most diverse cities in
the country. Right.
So I had that passion to what can we do here at Capitol to move toward seeing what we could do to bring people together. When I met Pastor Williams at St. Paul's, he welcomed that friendship, and he actually was the one who initiated inviting me into the Martin Luther King celebration. At the time, what I remember him telling me, there was a weekend that was in Sacramento designed to celebrate Martin Luther King Jr.'s life. There was a Christian celebration along with civic celebrations. So the Christian one was with just Christian churches. And it was being held at the Memorial Auditorium, and the city was gifting the use of the building to the Christian churches for that event. So he invited me to come and speak at it. If I remember him telling me, I think I was the first white pastor invited to speak Wow. at the MLK Christian, celebration. And that was probably late 90s at the Memorial Auditorium. And it was a powerful experience for me to be welcomed into the community and into the black community in a unique way. And it felt natural. It was a weird thing I can't understand it still fully, but just the bond was immediate. The next year, the city had gone through some financial, challenges, whatever, and they decided not to gift the building to the MLK committee for that event. And so that's when Pastor Williams said, to me, would you be able to host it at your church? Because our auditorium
was huge,
large. Yeah. And so we're like, sure. So that's actually, he initiated it, invited me in. Then the next year, there was a need for a place to hold it. And so we hosted the MLK Christian celebration for years, right after that. And it helped, I think, continue to bond my heart to others in the community. It's just I look at it as a God-ordained thing and not something that I set out to do or orchestrated at all.
I share with City Church often, when we're walking through the forest, it can sometimes seem, you know, foggy and you don't know where you're going. But in retrospect, you can always see the breadcrumb trail that was laid down, that this had to happen in order for this to happen, in order for this to happen. Before I forget, what was the professor? What was her name? The professor's name?
You know, it was so many years ago. I've actually tried to go back and find her, and I can't remember her name anymore.
If you can find that, we will include it on the bottom of this podcast,
for sure.
Just to say thank you for her input into your faith, that allowed you to become and to do the things that you have done. This is a good segue because you're no longer at Capital Christian, but now you are leading Capital Compassion, mm-hmm. a ministry focused on the least among us, the unhoused community, based out of Rancho Cordova, the Mather, former Mather Airport area. But you wrote two books, or you co-wrote two books, Soul Design, A Roadmap for Personal Growth, and Soul Design, Living a Life of Love. But a third book that you authored yourself, it's called Incarnate, Jesus Among the Broken. Jesus Among the Broken. One of the things, I looked on Amazon, and I saw where they quoted you. You said, on the streets, I found that I wasn't just wrong in various ways about broken people. But that captures broken people. That covers a lot of folks.
Sure.
Including me. On the streets, I found that I wasn't just wrong in various ways about broken people. I was wrong in layers. That was in 2014 when you had this experience. I can kind of project now that I've heard more about Pastor Cole. But what is it you have gotten, are getting, that many professing Christians, let's just leave it at that, don't seem to get?
Mm. It's interesting. I feel like it's another thing I've just been led into and didn't have a passion or a mission to go after. When Kevin Johnson was the mayor of our city, I learned of him having grown up here, and he grew up in Oak Park, mm-hmm. and I think St. Paul's was his church.
Correct. Still is.
Still is. And so that was just fascinating to me. I didn't know him at all, and I'd watched him play basketball. And I was studying for a Thanksgiving service, trying to see what are churches doing for homeless people. I just wondered. So I looked it up online, and it brought me to a story that the mayor, Kevin Johnson, put together a committee to address homelessness in town. And in the committee, he had two clergy seats on the committee, along with other health professionals and city, you know, city hospitals, things like that. And so I noticed there was one open seat in the clergy category, and I just sent a message off, hey, if you're interested, I'd be open to it. And I got a quick response inviting me to fill the seat. Wow. The other clergy person that was there was Sherwood Carthen. And became such good friends with him, miss him like crazy. When he passed suddenly, it was a real heartbreak. But it brought us together around homelessness and just kind of fell into it. We started a program through that effort of having churches host homeless people during the winter season called Winter Sanctuary. We were a couple of years in when some of the funding ran out for the infrastructure. There was buses that would take the homeless from downtown to the churches. And the churches did everything else for free, but this infrastructure cost some, not a huge amount, but enough.
Significant enough.
Yeah, significant. So that funding ran out, and Mayor Johnson asked, could you see about raising funds for the infrastructure to keep this program going? Otherwise, we'll have to close it down. So that's what led to, I met with our team at church, our leadership team, and said, we need to see what we can do to raise funds. And somebody came up with the idea, how about if you go live on the streets for a couple of weeks and we'll do a social media campaign and we'll call it Rev on the Streets and try to see if people would donate for this program, Winter Sanctuary, and get you back off the street. And so it was kind of an idea to raise funds. And it resonated with me. Like, I think I would like to do that. So from the time the idea came, 2 weeks later, I left church on a Sunday, picked up a backpack and a sleeping bag, left my wallet and keys, and hit the light rail right across from the church, took it downtown, and then stayed downtown for 2 weeks. And that's what impacted me. Why have I, you know, I think, experienced some things that others maybe don't? That experience opened my eyes. And I started now living among the homeless, trying to find out what happened, you know, what got them there. And there are so many, the layers are, the mental illness is huge, drug addiction, alcohol addiction. And then sometimes it's just people, you know, got to the edge and lost a job and don't have the severe issues. So there's just layers of someone is not that far from getting back on their feet. Someone else has an addiction that they can't seem to overcome. Someone else has a literal mental illness that's near impossible to figure out, you know, how to help. And we used to have institutions that would work with people with mental illness, and those don't exist like they used to.
Correct.
So it's led to people just being on the street. So all these layers of brokenness I began to see. And I think what happened for me is I still saw that each person is still created in the image of God. And I would look in the eyes of people that, you know, some pretty clouded, but still see that there's a soul there.
Correct.
And there's value there. And I think what changed for me is I could easily walk by a homeless person up until that time and not think much about it. Not my problem. Or I would think, you know, they're living off my taxes. And
you created this issue. You're the reason you're in this situation is because of something you've done.
So why don't you get yourself out of it?
Correct.
You know, those are common thoughts. And when I say that, I don't mean that judgmentally. That was me. I had those thoughts. And I don't, you know, think ill of anyone for having those thoughts. That's just natural. What changed for me was now seeing that some of these people don't have it within them to make the decisions to turn things around. They need help. And I started realizing I was telling some friends of mine about my experience partway through it. And one of my friends said the word incarnate. That's what the book came from. And that's all he said was incarnate. I'm like, well, what do you mean? He said, that's what you've done. You've incarnated into a homeless, you know, experience. So now you're seeing it differently. And that stuck with me because I knew the word incarnate from Bible school and seminary, like, Jesus.
Good theological word. Yeah.
Yeah. He is our incarnate one. And I started thinking about that. Here's Jesus, perfect. He's God, and he comes into human form, imperfect human that I am. He comes into the form that I am, and he experiences everything I do. He's been tempted in every point like we have, but hasn't sinned, thankfully. Correct. But he understands the pain. He experienced pain. He experienced sin on the cross.
Correct.
And all of that. And I couldn't get this out of my mind. Jesus incarnate into my life. And when he did that, he didn't tell me, you got yourself into this problem. Why don't you get yourself out of it? You can figure this out. Why don't you change? Jesus didn't come and tell me all the things I needed to do to fix myself. He came and said, I'm going to pay for you.
Preach.
I'm going to lay myself out. and take care of you. I'll do everything you can't do for yourself. And so now this thought is spinning in my mind, then why am I telling other people, you did this to yourself? Why don't you get yourself out of it? The great incarnate one, Jesus, doesn't do that for me. He doesn't do that for anyone. Why have I become the person who now puts that off on other people?
Correct.
Maybe if I really can get into their life, maybe I can help them like Jesus helped me. It's obviously not the same, but Maybe I can give them a hand up. Maybe I can steer them in a direction that they can't see on their own. And that's what transformed me, is seeing them as valuable human beings instead of the kind of people that don't deserve my time.
Castaways, collateral damage of the world, if you will.
Exactly.
So how do we not become jaundiced overwhelmed? I guess that's a better word. Yeah. Overwhelmed. Other women and men have taken a run up that homeless, unhoused hill. Mm-hmm. And as we were sharing before we started our recording, the situation hasn't improved.
No.
So why and where are we going?
Right. I don't have any ability to.
Okay, podcast is over. Yeah. I don't have the answer.
I know, right? How do you answer the big questions? I think what I do feel is, instead of being overwhelmed by that insurmountable issue, like, you know, this isn't getting any better, instead I'm stepping back from it and saying, but what can I do for one? Where can I start? Instead of doing, I'm paralyzed sometimes because of how big the problem is, don't know what to do. Instead of that, what can I do with what's in front of me? Was there something I could do today? Is there something I could do next week? Is there a way I can help one? And I think of, you know, there's the old starfish story of a person walking on the beach, all these starfish washed up, starts tossing one in the ocean, it saves it. And there's so many, you can't save them all. And somebody's like, you can't save all these starfish. Picks one up, throws one in, but I saved that one.
Correct.
So I think that's where I've come to, is who can I help? Is there one that might turn into two or 10 or 20, or who knows where that goes from here? And if there's more of us on the beach stepping into the life of a broken person, helping that one, who knows what kind of miracles can happen?
See, and as you say that, I'm reminded that in our zeal to transform others, we are being transformed.
Completely.
And so in that, which you've unpacked so well, I just so appreciate your heart and your story, that in the mutual transformation that's taking place, you know, be it unhoused, be it with race or culture, then the body of Christ, that's that third circle, the body of Christ then gets fully lived out in a way that others will see and are drawn to. Otherwise, it becomes religious pursuits, not transformation in the truest sense. And I think, let me go out on a limb, theologically or otherwise, that's where we're at. That is the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. I believe he quoted someone else when he said the most segregated time in America is 10 o'clock on Sunday morning.
Right. Yeah.
I won't, not only will I say things haven't changed much, they've probably gotten worse.
Yeah.
And so as that gets lived out, then our perspective on whatever the, you know, how do we get the starfish, how do we even have a mind to want to pick up starfish and toss them back into the ocean so that they thrive and live on a human level and, more importantly, on a spiritual level?
Yeah. Sometimes part of my prayer is, as we talk together here, you and I have, I think, a heart that's very similar. Like we've synergized in just the brief time that we've been able to connect up. even recently, I feel like there's a growing synergy.
Correct.
And I think sometimes if those listening can just catch a little glimpse of some other way of looking at the world, maybe it changes for that person. And we see someone that we decide to help instead of walk past the next time we see them. And I don't feel motivated to help everyone I run into. That's not what this is about. Sometimes it's following the prompts of the Holy Spirit, and he leads us to, like, I feel kind of drawn to talk to that person.
Correct.
Help that person and just see where that goes. It just opens up possibilities instead of having just an absolute, you know, blockage to, I don't feel like I should step into that.
Correct.
So if we can open that door a little bit, then I feel like that's what we're here for. You mentioned how even the race issues have gotten worse. When you started this podcast effort after George Floyd's murder, it felt hopeful. To me at the time, there were movements going on of, like, maybe this is a time to make progress. And I remember thinking maybe we're making some progress in the months just following that. Now it feels like there's been another wild backlash where I agree with you. I feel like it's getting worse again when it seemed like maybe we were going to go forward. Now the whole, you know, DEI, you know, destruction of those principles. Like, I thought those were good things.
Correct.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Well, sometimes people then take some extreme elements of that and want to destroy the whole thing. Now there's a huge backlash about things that were intended to help us, bring us together. So, man, it's a wild ride.
It is. As the adage goes, though, when you have these inflection points, it creates opportunity.
Yeah.
So with this opportunity, then, and again, I like using movies and music as examples, as Sean Connery grasped Kevin Costner in the dying scene of The Untouchables, grabbed him by the lapels, he said, so what are you prepared to do about it?
Mm.
So in this situation, maybe we are dying, literally and figuratively and spiritually. Mm. But what are we prepared to do about it?
Yeah.
You know, we can say, be warm and fed. You know, now I'll be praying. What are you prepared to do about it? Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
But I am also clear-eyed that it would be wonderful to have the aggregation of churches to come together in a way and lead, not follow, not join in the fray or that's in the good. Default. But I sense that we are allowing our humanity, whatever it looks like, our humanity to dictate our theology, our faith. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong. Yeah, but as long as I have Pastor Rick Cole here in community as my friend, I am so optimistic. Pastor Cole, thank you for joining us this morning. I'm not going to ask. You have to come back.
Gladly.
You have to come back into this space and share and unpack more on all the things that Capital Compassion is doing. We're going to add the URL so folks can dial in to the ministry and to potentially become partners and donate items with Capital Compassion. So, Pastor Cole, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate you inviting me and appreciate who you are. It's amazing.
Pray for us. Thank you.